Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy podcast is provided by DSL Extreme. Call 866-2-GET-NET for DSL Extreme.
Hi, this is Leo, and this is the Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on Sunday, September 2nd, 2007, on the Premier Radio Networks. This is show 384. Enjoy. Well, a good day to everyone across the Geek Nation. I am Leo Laporte, and it's time to talk high tech. Anything with a chip in it. 8888, Ask Leo is the number. 888-827-5536. Brings right into our Tech Guy Labs, where operators are standing by. Well, Gina is anyway. Ready to take your call and get you on the show. And what do we talk about? Well, if you've listened before, you know it's anything with a chip in it. From home theater, our home theater expert Scott Wilkinson tells us all about home theater. But I'll answer your home theater questions, too. To cell phones, to video games. We're talking about BioShock. That's the hot game out right now. To Macs, laptops, Windows, Vista, XP, Linux. If it's got a chip in it, we'll talk about it. 8888 Ask Leo. The chat room is at irc.dslextreme.com. And there's a show notes page at techguylabs.com. So there's lots of places to go to find out more about what's going on. Wednesday, it's funny, I do a Macintosh Netcast podcast every week. We talk about Macs. Mac Break Weekly, it's called. I also do a Windows one and a Linux one. But one of the shows that we do is every week is a Mac one. And it's happened twice in a row now where, as we're recording the show, we'll speculate on, is Apple going to make an announcement? There's rumors flying that September 5th, Apple's going to make a big announcement. And it never fails that I go, no, I would have received an invitation by now. Couldn't possibly be. I mean, it's too close. And then the minute that we end the show, the invitation comes in. I think Apple's listening. They wait until after I've already committed. So, yes, there is going to be a big event, a really big event. In San Francisco at Moscone Center West, which is where Steve Jobs gives his keynote addresses. This is a big hall. Now, the last event for Apple that they had was last month, and they had it at the Apple campus in a venue that holds about 200 people. This is 10 times bigger. Now, the last announcement was all Mac stuff, was iLife, the new iMacs. So maybe, I don't know, you could say maybe that's not as big a deal as whatever they're going to announce on Wednesday. And by the way, no one knows, lots of speculation. I just want to underscore, whenever you hear speculation about what Apple's going to do, it's pure speculation, including what I'm about to say, because no one knows. Apple's really good at secrecy. They're very clever about setting up canary traps and all sorts of devious schemes to keep their employees from saying word one to the press. You know what a canary trap is? That's where you pass disinformation along to a select group of people, maybe a variety of different stories, and then you wait and see which one of them leaks out. And you know, by virtue of the stories that you've handed out, who's telling the press. Rumors are Steve Jobs uses canary traps to trap employees, particularly executives. He'll tell teams of executives one thing, another team another thing, and then wait to see what happens. That's the story. Again, unconfirmed. Because everything is secret that Apple does. They're very good at this. So I think, though, it's a pretty safe bet. We have a couple of clues. It's a pretty safe bet that there's going to be an iPod announcement. This is exactly this time 1 year ago, or maybe it was 2 years ago, the Wednesday after Labor Day, they announced the Nanos, the new Nanos. And they're due, and Christmas buying season coming up. And so that would make sense. But the invitation says, the beat goes on. Now, remember, one big story that's been going on is the Beatles, getting the Beatles online. They haven't had any. You've had to go to the music store, the record store, to buy a Beatles song. They have not had online distribution up to now. Now, we've seen in the last few months, John Lennon's entire catalog, Paul McCartney's entire catalog, and now just lately Ringo's entire catalog emerge on the iTunes store, but no Beatles catalog. Everybody has admitted, even George Martin, the Beatles producer, said, you know, yeah, we're remixing for, we're preparing for online downloads. He says, in fact, he said this a year ago, as soon as we finish with the Vegas show Love, that's my job one. So there's no secret they're going online. The beat goes on. You might say, well, wait a minute. Isn't that Sonny and Cher? The beat goes on. The beat goes on. I made my... That sound, you make your nose a little long.
My beat goes on.
Anyway, no, I don't think it's Sonny and Cher because... And this is a clue that some trivia expert came up with. The last Beatles press release announcing their breakup, I guess. That was the title of it. The beat goes on. The last word from the Beatles as a group, the beat goes on. Yeah, okay. They're going to announce Beatles. They're going to announce a Beatles catalog. They'll announce new iPods. But still, you have to ask yourself, why this giant venue? Why this big auditorium in San Francisco that can hold, I don't know what the capacity is, but it's 1,000 or 2,000. It's huge. This is where Steve gives his biggest speeches. So I have to think there's more. Remember, one other thing that Steve Jobs loves to do, especially at these iPod announcements, is bring in artists. So John Mayer's made a few appearances, Kanye West. There have been big, big stars that he's brought on stage to perform a song or two at the end of these announcements. Okay, so here's my theory. Again, complete speculation. Complete speculation. My theory is one or other or both of the surviving Beatles on stage. I think both. I think this is exactly the kind of thing Steve Jobs loves to do. A Beatles reunion, the best he could do. A Beatles reunion. You know he'd love to do that. He'd spend whatever money it would take. McCartney's got a new album out he's promoting. Ringo's new, now on iTunes. I'm sure he'd love to promote that. What do you think? That's my theory. And here's I'm kicking myself because I can't go. I have a hot invitation. I mean, I think this is a hot invitation in my hands. Oh, you know, by the way, this is the 40th anniversary of Sgt. Pepper. 1967, right? The 40th anniversary of the Summer of Love. I mean, I think a Sgt. Pepper iPod. Why not? A special commemorative edition. I'd love to be at this. I'm going to be up in Canada doing my TV show this week, and I can't get out of it. I would love to be at this event. You could bet I'll be watching it on the, if they stream it live, I'll be watching it. They haven't been streaming live lately. They've been putting the video up later. Good quality, though. Who knows if they'll be, you know, there might be all sorts of rights issues. If they did have Paul and Ringo on stage, there might be all sorts of rights issues. Maybe they couldn't rebroadcast that, but that would be something I'd like to see. Anyway, watch Wednesday. If you're in the market this weekend, if you're going to the store to buy a new iPod, I wouldn't. I think this is the wrong time. A number of people asked me, do you think there'll be a new iPhone announced? No, I don't think so. I think we're going to stay with the iPhone model this year. Again, I am speculating. I know nothing. I have no inside information, but I don't think we'll see a new iPhone model. I think we're going to be stuck with that for a while. You may see changes to the iPhone. They could change the software, but I don't think you'll see a new hardware. I think almost certainly you'll see new iPods. It's my hope that these new iPods will have the same user interface that the iPhone does. This is the user interface you want. Forget the click wheel. It's better than the click wheel. I think the screens are gorgeous. It'd be a great video device. This is the iPod Apple should be making. You might have seen the pictures of the Fat Nano that were circulating. We talked about this last week. A Mac rumor blog called 9 to 5 Mac had pictures. You could see they were in the Photoshop window. So it looked like somebody Photoshopped these. And so they had absolutely no credence except for the fact that Apple sent out cease and desist letters to everybody who published the photos saying they're our property. Whoa. So maybe that is what the new Nanos would look like. I find it hard to believe, though. They're kind of squat. It looked like you cut a Nano in half. But I guarantee you, I hate to say guarantee. I'm pretty darn sure we'll see new iPods. I'm as sure as I could be of anything. I think there's a chance you'll see a Beatles iPod. I think there's a chance you'll see an iPod with the same user interface as the iPhone. I would like to see that very much. You may see Apple turn away from hard drives. Apple's kind of, I think that Apple's rethinking how the iPod works. Remember when the iPod first came out, the slogan was, you know, 1,000 songs in your pocket. They really kind of promoted the idea that you could have your entire music collection on this thing, especially as they got bigger and bigger hard drives. The biggest Apple iPod now is 80 gigabytes. And for most of us, that's more than enough for our entire music collection, plus some video. 80 gigabytes. But I think Apple's backing off on that. I think Apple's now thinking we want to do solid state, like the iPhone, like the Nano. Maybe capacity's greater than 8 gigabytes. Remember, the first iPod was a hard drive iPod was only 5 gigabytes, so 8's not so bad. I think the idea is use iTunes to manage your music. You don't have to have everything on your iPod. You just want to rotate them. Every time you dock, you get a new set of music, maybe based on your ratings. My friend Merlin Mann, well, we've got to get him on to talk about his schemes. He's got these smart playlist schemes designed to keep your iPod fresh without having to put everything on there. I like having my entire record collection on one device that I could put in my pocket. I like that idea. Anything I want to hear, it's there. But I have a feeling, we'll see Wednesday, I have a feeling Apple might be moving away from that. What do you think? If you could get something that's slim, has great battery life, is much more robust, but doesn't have as much memory, would you prefer that to one that maybe you have to take a little bit better care of? Those hard drives are a little more fragile, have to be a little fatter, battery life is a little lower, but have more capacity. What would your choice be? Maybe Apple's best plan is to get you to get both. Maybe there may well be their strategy. How many people own multiple iPods? I bet you at least half of the iPod marketplace people have multiple iPods. Let's talk about that or anything else on your mind. It's time to talk high tech, okay? 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Tech guy, uh-huh. Hey! 88, ask Leo. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Let's talk about high tech. Ah, I love this job. I do. Mark and Santa Ana, welcome. You're first on the show. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, thanks for taking the call.
Thanks for calling, Mark.
Hey, I had a question. Actually, I had a couple quick questions. One of them was a wiki. I want a wiki that I'm in control of being able to edit everything, but I want to give permissions for individual parts of a site, which I can easily define, for other people to edit.
Right. Let me just explain what a wiki is for folks who don't know. I love wikis. In fact, my website is a wiki, although we've taken a lot of the collaborative, in fact, all the collaborative features out, unfortunately. We had to because people were abusing it, and I just didn't have enough of a community to keep it clean. You know, Wikipedia is wide open and public. It's the best-known wiki. Anybody can edit it. My son, I'm so proud of him. My 13-year-old son the other day said, "Hey, Dad, you know, you could change your entry and say all sorts of rude things about you." I said, "Thanks, Henry. Can you not do that, please?" So even he can do it. But because there's a community on Wikipedia, and they have editors, and they really have a lot of people looking at every page. Most of the time, those vandalisms are fixed very quickly. That wasn't the case with mine. Almost any wiki software will give you those kinds of permissions. The software I use and I like a lot and do recommend is PMWiki. It's free from pmwiki.org. The idea of a wiki is that anybody can edit it. It's a community editable web page. And a really good way to get a community to participate in creating content. So with PMWiki, you can have a separate password for every page if you want.
Okay.
If that's sufficient. Now, there are, you know, software that Wikipedia uses is called MediaWiki. It's a lot more powerful, but it's also a little more, configuration to get working. PMWiki is very easy to get working. You have a server running PHP and MySQL?
No, actually, that's what I'm going to have to also do. The idea is that I'm creating kind of a referral site, and so I want the people who do the work to be able to say, this is what I do, and then I want the customers to be able to say,
excellent,
yeah, they did it, or no,
oh,
they
bite. That's a great idea. Another, you can always use something like PBWiki. There are a number of hosted wiki solutions out there. PBWiki is a very good one. where you don't have to have a host, a domain. They'll set it up for you for free, and they're paid versions that you can, you know, for a commercial enterprise, you'd like to maybe have some more advanced features. You can pay for it as well. I think it's really, PBWiki is a very good choice for something like that.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I've already got the site. I got my 800 number down.
Oh, okay.
And so, okay, can I ask you another quick question?
Certainly.
Do you still like, I don't remember if it was the iBoss or the iPhantom. I'm going to help a school. They need to have some kind of, you know, web filtering content device.
Yeah, the iBoss is what you would use.
Technology grant.
Yeah, you'd use an iBoss. There's some downside to it. One is it has a monthly fee. But I think that's it. You know, because it's one device for all the computers, I don't think that's necessarily a drawback. It might even be cheaper than buying individual software for each computer.
Right.
And you want to keep it up to date, and that's why you're paying a monthly fee. They maintain it. They maintain the block list and all that stuff. The other downside, which may or may not be significant to you, is there is some reduction in speed because you have to go through the iBoss servers. That's where the stuff is sanitized. So there's an extra layer.
Because this is just for a school I'm helping. It's a little, you know, little school.
I think it's a good choice because the teachers don't need to know anything, right?
Right. No, I'm just, you know what? I'm just simply going to put a page up that says, if you can't get to this page and you want to get to this page, talk to the sister.
Right.
If this is a page you don't want to go to, go see Father for confession.
I love it. Yeah, the iBoss lets you
put on there.
The iBoss lets you do that. Customize the block pages. It also allows you to, you know, blacklist your own sites or whitelist your own sites. So the sister could unlock sites if there were a reason to do so. I should warn you that no blocking technology is 100% perfect, so you may get that confessional page once in a while.
Right. No, I understand. One last quick question.
It does work very well, and it has additional features that I think you'll like. For instance, you can unblock certain IP addresses. So you could say, well, the teachers get access. You can actually have groups where you say you have a teacher's group that has more general access. You have a student group that has less access. So you might even have a lower school group and an upper school group.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
One last question about SpinWrite. I just put a new hard drive in, and I ran my SpinWrite, and it got what seemed like a lot of seek errors, but it was more like seek retries.
Yes.
And I was looking on his site, and the only thing he's got up there for documentation is version 5. And I want to know when it starts, you know, when you talk about a gray area, of it's kind of starting to have errors. I don't know what that means, and I don't know how
bad that's
good.
That's what it's doing. No, that's what it's doing. That's what SpinWrite does. So when it starts, all hard drives have errors.
Mm-hmm.
So what SpinWrite's looking for is sectors that are having a hard time being read and write, and he has a very good algorithm on there. If he can't get it so that it's reliable, he'll map it out, and you won't see it again. So those seek errors are part of the process.
Okay.
That's actually what you'd expect.
So as long as there's no actual bad sectors being found and all that stuff,
it'll tell you. Yeah, it'll tell you. And what it does is it reformats. If it has trouble finding data on a drive, on a sector, it'll move the data off, reformat, put the data back, and often that fixes the problem.
Right. Okay.
Very clever software.
Okay,
I do
as
recommend
always,
it.
Thanks a lot for your help.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate
all
it.
Right.
So just to recap, pmwiki.org. I have a bunch of links in there. pmwiki.org is the wiki software I use and recommend, although, as I mentioned, MediaWiki, which Wikipedia uses, is very good. The iBoss is from Phantom Technologies, myiBoss, myiBoss.com. And SpinWrite is from my friend Steve Gibson, our security guru. And he sells that software at his site, grc.com. I got to take some show notes here. We'll put those up at TechGuyLabs.com. More of your calls to come, 8888-ASK-LEO. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Tech Guy is brought to you by DSL Extreme. Call 866 the number 2 get net or visit them online at dslextreme.com. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy at 8888. Ask Leo. Love to hear from you. Let's talk about high tech. 8888. Ask Leo. Lori's on the line from Austin, Texas. Hi, Lori. Leo Laporte here.
Hi, Leo. You've been helping me since the days when you and Gina Smith were on the radio.
Oh, my goodness. That goes back like 15 years.
A long time.
Holy camoly. Well, I'm glad. That's great. Yeah, we used to be on in Austin.
I have an annoyance.
Okay.
Pardon?
We did used to be on in Austin, I remember. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. I have a home network with four systems running XP, and you know, I've shared several different folders from one system to the other. They're mapped as drive letters. When I'm on one system and I try to connect to this other mapped folder, it just doesn't see the machine. It takes 30 to 60 seconds, and eventually, after pounding away, clicking and clicking and clicking, it eventually will then see the machine and make the connection.
Oh, that's interesting. So it does eventually work.
It does eventually, after 30 or 60 seconds, and I sometimes will go up and use the map network drive and to go into browse and find the machine and click it there, and sometimes it'll find it.
If you don't use the mapping, if you just go to, as you say, if you do a network browse, does it see it right away, or does that also take a few seconds, 30 seconds?
That also takes.
Okay. So any connection between the machines is delayed by a half a minute to a minute.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem to matter which machine. And the machine that I might be having the problem with, it's got connectivity to the Internet and everything else. It's got network connectivity.
And that's normal and performs fine and everything.
Yeah, everything else is fine.
You know,
it's a gigabit router.
Okay. Sounds like it could be a number of things. It could be collisions on the network. Ethernet is a collision-based networking technology, and it will get slowed down if there are collisions. What kind of cable are you using for your gigabit Ethernet?
Cat 6.
Okay. Good. So you're using upgraded cable.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be another cause of it is you know, because Ethernet's designed to be robust under bad conditions. So, I mean, that's where I'm thinking it's happening at the physical layer, because the idea of Ethernet is even if it's a bad situation, keep trying and eventually you'll get it. And that's what it sounds like is happening. It's not like, you know, a lot of times people have trouble with network shares because of security software blocking it. But you know, it's not blocked. It's getting through. So there's something going on that's slowing it down. Once it's connected, the transfers seem to be at full gigabit speed.
Once it connects, everything is fine. And it's the same problem. If I use a remote desktop to connect, it's the same issue. It takes a while to connect using remote desktop, and then eventually it'll connect. It's like I have to wake up the machine, but it's not in sleep mode. I don't have any screensavers. I have nothing running on any of the machines that would, I would think, you know, kind of put it to sleep.
Yeah, no. I think it's a physical issue. Now, there are settings. I hate to get into this black art here. This is real voodoo, but there are settings. The network interface card has a variety of settings that can tune its performance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that may be a place to look. And believe me, I have no idea what to recommend you change to. You might go to practicallynetworked.com, which is an excellent site for this kind of stuff, and see what they recommend in terms of different settings that you could try on that card, on the hardware itself. You're using Ethernet, built-in Ethernet cards on all the machines? You're not talking wireless, right?
Yes, built-in Ethernet card.
Okay, no.
My laptop is 100 megabit. It's not gigabit.
Yeah, that's fine. Well,
I don't know if that would make a difference.
It might slow the network down. You might want to put that on a switch to keep it separate.
Oh, okay.
But it still shouldn't, even 10 megabit should connect. It's not the throughput speed that's the issue. It's the connection that's the issue.
Yeah, no, I'm transferring files. It's great.
Those feel fine, yeah.
Yeah, 250 megabits per second from one drive to another on a, you know, over the network.
That's nice. I know. I love gigabit Ethernet for that reason. You got me stumped. I'm not sure exactly. I would say almost certainly that you would want to take a look at the settings in your card. And again, I don't have any recommendations for what to set that for, but that's beyond me. I would say almost certainly, Lori, it's a hardware issue. You know, we talk about networking as a 7-layer cake, and going from the lowest level, which is the basic hardware level, all the way up to the software level. And I can't imagine why you're having a hard time making that connection. Once it's established, it sounds like it's working. So it may not be a hardware issue. You got me. Maybe somebody listening as a networking expert can make a suggestion as to why it would take so long. She's doing something cool. If you're new to this whole idea of network share, she's doing something great, which is called mapping a drive. Windows will let you, you know, normally a network share is a weird name. It's like //workgroup/shares/Joey/music. But Windows will let you map that long, crazy, kooky name to a drive letter. Make that M colon. Furthermore, with the mapping, it will automatically, every time you boot that machine, add that as if it's a drive. As if, you know, it's a drive on the local machine, which is a really handy feature, this drive mapping. It makes this network drive, this shared drive, appear to be local. And if you have a fast network, if you're using this 1 million bit per second networking, that's great. Then you really can go back and forth really fast. Is it 1 billion? It's 1 billion bits per second, a gigabit. It's almost as fast as a hard drive. But I am stumped as to why it would take one. Here's just for the network experts who are listening, just to recap, it takes a half a minute to a minute to bring up that mapped drive. But once it's up and on the desktop, then she can copy just as fast as anything else. Lori, I'm so glad you've been listening for so long. I thank you. I'm sorry I could be so little help. But the good news is we have a vast and knowledgeable listening audience. Email me at leo@techguylabs.com. You can go to the chat room at irc.zslextreme.com, or you can call us at 8888-ASK-LEO and help Lori out. Keep listening, Lori. We'll find a solution for you. Robert's on the line from Fallbrook, California. Hey, Robert.
Hey, Leo. How's it going today?
Wonderful.
Thanks for packaging education and entertainment in one package. What a deal.
Wow. Thank you.
Yeah, termination and slow systems on those networks are often a problem.
Termination. There's a term I haven't thought of in a long time. We used to have to do that. Remember when we had that?
Yeah.
We had kind of a different kind of a topology where you had that cable. I forgot that.
Yeah, it was a nightmare.
And each end had to be terminated. And if you disconnected one computer or broke the termination, the whole ring would go down.
Yep. Those days are gone.
Thank goodness. Yeah. You don't have to worry about termination on a modern twisted pair network. No. Okay. You scared me for a minute. Okay.
No. Just history. And speaking of history. Okay. So I went out and bought myself a new HP laptop, DV9000, I think it is. It's like a 9320, whatever it is. 17-inch. Kind of a nice system.
Sounds great.
And went through the annoying hassle of bringing XP on board and getting rid of Vista as fast as I could. And the question I come up with is, this is a fairly nice system, and I would like to delay my next upgrade. And what usually gets to me is that the reason why I need upgrades is for performance.
Right.
So does anyone make an external computer brick? Way back when, they used to make external computer bricks. Again, another history lesson, that you could actually hook up to your system. And, of course, we didn't have the nice buses we have nowadays with USB 2.0, et cetera, FireWire. Does anyone make a brick that has nothing but processors and memory in it out there that you can stack and make parallel processors with? Make a quad.
Interesting idea. You know, I don't think the buses are fast enough to really make that realistic. The best way to do that would be with clustering, something like a Beowulf cluster.
This is more of a, you keep all the processing power local in the architecture and the brick, and then you'd run it like a PC-80ware.
The laptop becomes a terminal.
Yeah, and that's all you need. You don't need, a 17-inch display and four USB ports and plus all the other stuff it's got on it. I mean, it's got everything you can only type and read so fast. And what you need is the MIPS to happen to make the calcs happen.
I don't know if anybody who sells this as a package is a done deal, but it's not wouldn't be that difficult of a thing to do. What you need is software that kind of is aware enough to basically use the cluster. And some advanced, certainly a lot of advanced graphics software will do that. It'll say, okay, how many processors are there on the network? And that's generally how people will connect these, is via network, Ethernet. They'll say how many processors are out there. Oh, good, I'll go out and use, split up my tasks among the various processors. If you wanted to use this brick as a mainframe and use your laptop as a terminal,
Yes, that's what
kind
I'm talking
of a smart
about.
Terminal.
Yep.
Yeah, there's absolutely ways to do that. There are, let me think what the best way. Well, I mean, it'd be easy to do in Linux because you have X Windows. It would allow you to do that. With you'd have to use a remote desktop kind of thing if you wanted to use Windows.
Right. Well, I was thinking of using something like a PC Anywhere package. Well,
I would just use I would just use remote desktop as long as you have XP Pro on that brick.
Yeah, you can do that. Okay.
And the new, you know, I think another way to do this would be very intriguing. Is the new, and this won't be out till next year, but the new Windows Server 2008 Longhorn server. Which is, I know you don't like Vista, but get this. They're going to have a non-GUI version. So it won't have a desktop. It'll just be command line, basically. But you will
I don't object to Vista for Vista's sake, but I'm everyone's tired of being the debugger for Microsoft.
Yeah, no, I think this server's going to be pretty reliable. I think Server 2008 is what you want to do. And then, so what you'll have is you'll have a central brick that's running Server 2008. That'll be your power machine. You know, and that could, you know, you're talking about the future anyway, because your HP now is plenty powerful enough. But you're talking about a year from now, you'll run 2008 on this brick. Your HP will still be running XP. It'll be a client. You can run anything you want. You can run XP. You could run probably Windows 2000 as a client. And you have Windows Server running as the centralized system. I think that's, and because you know, this is actually something that most server operating systems have done for years. They eliminate the graphical user interface. That just uses up CPU cycles, and you don't have anybody sitting there looking at the windows. So that's what they're finally, Microsoft's doing with Windows Server 2008. I think that's going to be the solution for you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Laporte, the tech guy. I don't want to turn this into the networking show, but let's see if we can quickly help a caller from Austin. Jim is on the line from Fort Worth. Hey, Jim, you're a network engineer. Why is it taking her an hour? I'm sorry, a minute. It only feels like an hour.
It'll seem like an hour.
And what's going on?
Doing pretty good. I've been listening to you back since ZDTV days.
Thanks, Jim.
With you and Patrick, so it's been quite a while. I'm glad to hear you're on XM.
I love doing it. I'll tell you, we're happy about this.
real quick, it sounds like she's having a resolution issue.
Yes.
Because once she connects, the transfer works fine.
Right.
She has no slowdowns at that point.
Right.
Typically, for a home network, usually somebody will have a DSL-type router or cable modem router.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing distributes out DNS settings that the ISP gives them.
Right.
That DNS does not include the name of any of the machines on her home network. So what's happening is the machine that she's trying to map the drive on, that machine name is not in the DNS, so Windows is eventually timing out and failing over to either.
It uses DNS to resolve the name?
Windows 2000 and above usually hits DNS first.
Wow.
And what will happen is...
On a mapped drive?
Yes.
Wow.
And what will happen is if the machine can't find it in DNS, it'll look for WINs if there's no WIN settings, which usually there's not in a home network.
Right.
Then it'll drop over to a broadcast type resolution.
Effectively browsing, looking.
Broadcast out, hey, machine one, where are you?
Yeah, looking
for eventually
it
responds back. So that whole sequence is taking about 30 to 60 seconds.
So how can she bypass that?
If she knows the IPs of the machines, what she could do is inside the Windows System 32 folder, there's a folder called drivers and then another one called etc.
Add to the hosts file.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And usually that should take care of the problem. Okay. If the machine's on the network and usually grabs the same address time after time, that should help speed up the resolution quite a bit.
Jim, I thank you so much. Now I'm going to translate.
No problem.
I'm going to explain what we just said because there's a lot of people going, DNS, WINs, what, hosts, what? Thank you, Jim. I'm sure Lori understands what you said and can implement that. She sounded like she was pretty sophisticated. I had no idea that Windows would use DNS to try to resolve the network name. Wow. Thank you.
Thank you. No problem.
Take care.
Have a good one.
So just to explain what he just said, you know, surfing, when you surf the net, you have to figure out, where am I going? All it going to a website involves is you tell your computer, I want this site, this name, techguylabs.com. The computer then has the responsibility of figuring out which specific computer out of the billions on the internet you want. And it goes to that computer and says, give me the web page. That's not easy. And it involves something called the domain name system, which is a fairly complex system that essentially is a phone book. It goes through the domain name resolution system and it finds out what the Tech Guy Labs number is, and then it kind of dials that number, goes specific. It actually routes to that number, that machine. So it's a really amazing system that works surprisingly well given its complexity. It's quite elegant. Well, what I didn't know is, you know, I knew that that's how it works on the internet. What I didn't know is that that's how it works in your home network too. When you say, I want the M drive, remember you're talking about mapping that M drive to /workgroup/Lori/music. Actually, it's backslashes. I didn't realize this, that the first thing that that computer does is query the domain system. Well, it's not going to be in the domain system because it's not an internet computer. It's a local computer. There is a system, a naming system that Windows uses on, and corporate networks use it typically, called WINS. But most home users aren't running a WINS server. One computer has to be designated a WINS server. It's just like a DNS. It's WINS. Same idea, name resolution. So when it tries these two systems, neither of them works. Then, and finally, it says, well, nobody seems to know where this computer is. Anybody out there know? And it will query the whole network. And then, and that's a pretty fast process, then that computer it's trying to connect to say, oh, yeah, I'm here. And they'll make the connection. So one way to kind of add a DNS entry is, you know, the very first place your computer looks to try to resolve these domain names is in this small text file called hosts. That's in your win32/system/driver/etc folder. Hosts, H-O-S-T-S. It's a text file. In fact, there's one entry already in there. Localhost 127.0.0.1. But you can add more. So I presume, and I should have asked Jim, but I would guess you'd add the fully qualified network name, you know, the //workgroup, et cetera, space, and then the IP address of that computer. And if, as long as that's actually the correct IP address, that should happen very quickly and speed it up. Interesting. I had no idea. Well, I've learned something here. Something pretty arcane. It kind of amuses me that here we are, you know, we're just home users. We just, you know, we got a TV, we got a microwave, we got a computer. We just want to use the computer like we use our TV and microwave. Oh, and maybe we have another computer and maybe we want a backup system. Suddenly we have a network and now we're in the realm of professional computer system administrators and security experts here, because it's very complicated. Nothing a home user should ever have to know. And you shouldn't ever have to modify your host file. That host file, though, is very useful. I mean, you can use it for a lot of things, speeding up network internet access. You can use it to block sites you don't want people to go to. All you have to do is put a dummy entry in. Let's say you don't want anybody to go to Google.com. You can put a dummy entry in for Google.com. You'll never get there. A lot of anti-spyware software does that. It'll modify your host file. In fact, if you look at your host file and you see a lot of entries, that's probably anti-spyware software that's gone in there and put all of the known bad guys in that list and made sure that they don't go anywhere, that if you try to go to that site, it won't go anywhere. You can use that to block ad servers as well. Boy, was that geeky. I hope I didn't scare you off. Let's get back to normal tech. In just a little bit, we're going to talk more about technology in all its forms, not just networking, but MP3 players, cell phones, home theater too. Don't be scared. It's going to be okay. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. TechGuyLabs.com is the website. Chat room, irc.dslextreme.com. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, our gadget guru, coming up. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. All across the Geek Nation, we're talking about this cool stuff that's changing our lives and changing the world at 8888 Ask Leo. 8888 Ask Leo. Man, have you been watching this fight between NBC and Apple? Wow. Now NBC says Apple got it all wrong. All right, let me recap. The real problem, I don't think, is NBC, but Vivendi and Universal. NBC is owned by Vivendi, and Universal is owned by Vivendi. Universal's been fighting with iTunes. In fact, Universal has been pushing Apple very hard to do something called variable pricing. This is something the record labels have wanted to do on iTunes. They don't like the idea that you pay 99 cents for any song. They want to charge you more for new songs and less for old songs. And Apple, for some reason, I'm not sure why, doesn't want to do this. Maybe it's just too complicated. I don't know. Certainly from a consumer's point of view, knowing how much a song's going to cost is nice. But on the other hand, I wouldn't mind paying less for older songs, catalog. I think that's kind of cool. And I don't buy that much new music. The record companies say we should be able to make more money on the hot hits. We don't mind selling the catalog for less. In any event, Apple's been very clear that they don't want to do this. Universal's been very upset. They've gone month to month on their contract with iTunes. It's hard to say no to iTunes. They're the number three music retailer. They're huge. Not just online, but number three. They're number one online easily. They're number three of all music retailers in the U.S. They're huge. You know, Walmart, I don't know what the is Best Buy. It's like Walmart and Best Buy and iTunes. I mean, it's that big. And so they have a lot of clout. So it's Universal's not saying, oh, we're pulling our music off because it's too important for their business. But at the same time, they're threatening. They don't like it. And they're putting pressure on Apple. Well, they found another way to put pressure. NBC, their sister corporation. NBC has a contract that runs on iTunes through December. They say, we want to raise the prices in December. We want variable pricing too. Sound familiar? We want to be able to charge more for some shows and less for others. Apple says, NBC said they plan to charge $4.99 for The Office. And again, Apple said, no. It's $1.99 a show. That's it. End of story. You can charge more for a season pass. NBC, apparently, they say in their press release, well, we didn't say $4.99, but what we did say is we want variable pricing. We want to be able to put together packages. This is, I think, what Apple really fears, and you should too, where you buy, well, you get 20 shows for $48, and included in there is stuff you have no interest in seeing. The same record model, you know, the CD model that record labels have been doing for years, with a couple of good cuts and the rest junk. NBC is looking at Universal saying, hey, you know, I bet you there's Universal executives in there saying, hey, this is how you ought to do it, kid. You know, this is how we made a lot of money on this. Yeah, see, you take your junk, see, and you bundle it in with your good stuff, see, and you make them buy it all. It's great. It's pure profit. So some goon is telling NBC this. Now, I'm not saying Apple's fighting the good fight, but they're trying to hold the line here. NBC says, all right, we're going to pull off all of our shows in December, including Office, Battlestar Galactica. Apple says, okay, in fact, since you're going to do that in December, we better not start now because people will be disappointed. The season's not even over and they can't buy more shows. So we're going to pull your shows next month. It's a little game of brinksmanship. Can I tell you how stupid NBC is being at this point? Have I mentioned how dumb this is on NBC's part? How foolish? What they forget is, now, I'm not advocating this, but I'm just pointing it out. You can get all these shows illegally, absolutely free, in higher quality from the internet. The shows are already available free, usually within an hour after they're aired. And there's no way to stop this, by the way, because you're broadcasting these shows. All it takes is one guy with a video capture card and internet access, and boom, the show is out there. You cannot stop this. So if NBC decides, oh, we're going to make more money, Apple says, no, you're not, and pulls them, what's going to happen? Well, NBC is going to lose all that revenue. Maybe they'll go somewhere else. I don't know. Is there anywhere else? They go to Amazon? Oh, yeah. I bet Amazon's selling a lot of TV shows. There's nowhere else to go. And this is the most important thing. There's somewhere for your customers to go, and that's somewhere it makes you no money. Now, I don't know how many people would do that. It's not legal, but it's impossible to stop. It takes some technical savvy, I guess. It's a lot harder to do than to just click a button on iTunes. But you're looking at giving up all your revenue. I have to think NBC will blink here. And if they don't, they're nitwits. Now, remember, there's this new site called Hulu. Terrible name. Excuse me. HULU.com. Hulu. This is a joint venture of NBC Universal and Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation. It's a YouTube, quote, YouTube killer. It's a video site that will not have any of those awful amateur things like Chocolate Rain. Oh, please. No, only professional content. They've already raised $100 million in financing. You'll have to play it in their own special player. I'm sure there'll be copy protection. There'll be no way you can copy this to your... You'll have to watch it on your computer. This is, once again, NBC, Universal, Fox, just not getting it. Just not getting it. Now, they've got a lot of studios. I mean, look, this is going to be a big play. HULU.com. There's going to be a terrible name. I'm sorry, I cannot get over this, how bad this name is. Hulu. It's like, who loses? I'll tell you who loses. NBC. They say they've got a dozen TV networks, two major film studios signed up. Distribution partners include the big players, AOL, Comcast, MSN, MySpace, and Yahoo. This is big business saying, hey, we're going to take this YouTube phenomenon. Enough of this grassroots video. Enough of letting people play what they want when they want, and enough of them getting shows that they can move around. No. We're going to make sure we control exactly how they watch these shows. And I tell you, I think it's going to backfire. I think once consumers get a taste of this, it's not too hard. Let's say, okay, here comes September. What is it? September 25th that The Office debuts, and a bunch of people go to iTunes and say, wait a minute, it's not on iTunes anymore. How long before Neighbor Joe says, well, here's a link you can click and download it for free in high def. High def. No commercials. Really looks good. How long before that starts happening? You force people into that situation. So who's right? Who's wrong here? Is it NBC? Is it Apple? What's going to happen? Is NBC going to blink? I think NBC is going to blink. I think if they don't, it's going to hurt. And I don't think Hulu is going to work, especially if it's $4.99 a show. Is that what would it cost for a DVD? What did the DVD for the season one of The Office cost? Less than that, right? $5 an episode. How many episodes were there? 13? No, there were more than that. There were 22. That'd be $110 for a season. That's ridiculous. I think Apple is in a catbird seat here. They can just say goodbye, NBC. So long. There will be other people who will get this. If you really want to do this, go ahead. Hulu. By the way, you know who owned the name Hulu? A 7-year-old girl. A 7-year-old girl. Essentially, Rupert Murdoch. It's like stealing candy from a baby. They just took it. They said, oh, Hulu. We like that name. Not a great name. According to Valley Wag, the website, which didn't feature Hulu.com, didn't feature videos at all. Just innocent pictures of a couple's 7-year-old daughter. Maybe her name was Hulu. I don't know. I hope he paid him money for it. And I hope the girl's name isn't Hulu, to be honest with you. What is Hulu? Couldn't you come up with something better having to do with maybe video? It sounds like there'd be bad Hawaiian videos on there. Hulu.com. And how do you spell that, right? Whoulu? I don't know. Just seems confusing. But they've got $100 million. They've got the big backers. They've got a CEO who's former Amazon executive, fancy offices in L.A. This will be very interesting. And none of those amateur videos. Oh, we just, you know, that's what gets me. No, only professional quality videos. No amateur stuff. Right, because the most popular stuff on YouTube is the professional stuff, right? What do you watch on YouTube? The glossy, highly produced videos? No. Watch the funny stuff, the silly stuff. Just look at what's on the top most viewed. Let's see. Let's just look. The most viewed videos of all time on YouTube. Evolution of the Dance, comic with a handy cam in the back. Avril Lavigne's music video. A couple of music videos. A guy playing guitar. That's number four. You have to go all the way down to number six to find an NBC clip. And that's going to be gone. Let's take your calls in just a bit. Leo Laporte, I am the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 88 Ask Leo. That's the number. 88 Ask Leo. Talking about high tech. Zilch in the chat room says, well, what's the point of even talking about what NBC is up to there? That's a business decision. If it's a bad decision, the market will win. Well, I agree. I'm just amazed that companies that are apparently run by intelligent adults make such stupid business decisions again and again. And make decisions that ultimately not only hurts them, but hurts their customers. It's not as bad. You know, there are worse things. They could put copy protection on. Oh, wait a minute. There is copy protection on the iTunes, isn't there? Don't get me started. I'm not crazy about that either. But I do have to say, I want to support artists. I believe in paying for stuff, and I bought all three episodes, seasons of The Office on iTunes. But what happens if you can't buy it, or it's so expensive that you can't afford it? Then what happens? See, maybe I'm an unusual. I don't have cable TV, so. I'm one of those weird people who watches everything downloaded from the internet. Roger Fullerton, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks for hanging on, Roger. What can I do for you?
You're welcome. Hey, Leo, love your show.
Thank you.
A couple of my local FM stations have advertised they're transmitting in high definition now.
Yes.
What is that?
AM stations are going to do it too. By the way, it's HD, not high definition.
Okay.
Because it's HD when it comes to radio. Doesn't stand for high definition. It's a convenient confusion, though, isn't it, don't you think?
Yeah.
I wonder why they chose HD.
It confuses us.
Yeah, it stands for hybrid digital, not high definition.
Okay.
But they
so they're
clearly
streaming some digital?
Yeah, they clearly want to confuse you and make you think it's high def.
Okay.
It is higher quality. It's digital. That's exactly what it is. It's digital. And because digital is a more efficient way to send data through the air, they can send higher quality. So FM, the selling point, and you can find out more about it by going to hdradio.com. The selling point on FM is that FM will sound as good as a CD. And AM will sound as good as FM.
And you need a special tuner to do this.
You need a special radio. You can buy them now. Some cars are coming with them. Many stations are moving there. You should check before you buy such a thing. I would check absolutely to see how many signals in your area are available.
Uh-huh. You know of any portable units that are out or any MP3 players that have them?
Oh, that's an interesting question.
And another question. From an MP3 player, can you record from the FM tuner?
I would be willing to bet you cannot record. I don't know, but I would bet that they would keep you from recording because, of course, that's the trend in general. The record industry doesn't want people to record music anymore off the radio.
Mm-hmm.
So my guess would be that there aren't any HD radios that give you the capability of recording. But of course, there's always the analog hole, you know, the ability to take the speaker output of this thing and record it.
Yeah.
But I don't know if there's anything with built-in recording. You know, there are a lot of HD radios out there. Radio Shack sells them now. Sony has, most of the models I've seen are either car or desktop. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a portable. The issue would be really the antenna required for this thing, and I don't know what it looks like. Does it look like a satellite antenna? You know, you could tell I don't have one and I haven't listened. Uh-huh. I think it's a standard radio, and, you know, it's like a, you know, one of those telescoping antennas.
Okay. But the regular digital radio will not pick this up.
What, I don't know what a digital radio is.
A digital tuner.
No, you need a special HD radio tuner.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. I think many of the stations I'm on are in HD, available in HD, but you have to have the special radio and so forth. I think it sounds very good. The radios are not cheap. They're a couple hundred bucks. You know, Ron Rosberg. In fact, Ron's gonna be on in about 20 minutes. We'll ask him. He's actually recommended a number of HD radios. Cambridge Soundworks sells one. Sony sells one. Crutchfield has a whole place. If you go get the Crutchfield catalog, which I love, it's, you know, kind of fun to look at all this stuff. The Crutchfield has a number of HD radios. I'm just looking to see what they've got, and it doesn't look like they have anything portable. Just car and desktop. There's the F's, you know, the interesting thing that's going on here is that the FCC would like to reclaim spectrum. There, you know, the air that's all around us is capable of carrying a lot of, you know, different frequencies, but there are only a few that are really usable. You know, a few, whatever, 100 or 1,000 that are really usable. Those are very valuable. And the FCC is really trying to get broadcasters, television and audio broadcasters, to move to digital because when you take packets and you send them through the air, it's more efficient. You can get more data on the same frequencies, more channels in the same amount of spectrum. That's the whole idea behind moving television stations to these new digital frequencies. So I don't know if the HD radio is coming from the FCC or coming from stations who would like to improve their quality and compete with, you know, the MP3 players and CDs and so forth. I suspect it's from the stations. But I remember talking with Michael Powell, the last chairman of the FCC, about this. And he said, we want everybody to go digital eventually. That's certainly our plan because it frees up spectrum and gives and goodness knows there's lots of things we can do with it, including wireless networking. Cell phones, wireless networking, radio, television, all competing for these, you know, these same kind of real estate. And so by using the real estate more efficiently, it's better. Tell you what, Ron's coming up. We'll talk to the gadget guru. And the first thing I'll ask him is which HD radio he prefers, which hybrid digital radio he prefers, and if there's anything portable. More of your calls to 888-88-ASK-LEO. I am Leo Laporte, the tech. Carbonite, automatic, secure computer backup over the internet. Try it free at carbonite.com. Oh, you gotta love David Lee Roth. Leo Laporte, the Eddie. Tech guy. Can you hear me, Ron? Ron Owens. Oh, wait a minute. Let me turn myself up so you can hear me. Hey, Ron. Ron Owens. Ron Rosberg is here. Hey, who's Ron Owens? I don't know who that is. Ron Rosberg.
I never heard of him.
Never heard of the guy. Ron Rosberg, everybody knows, is the gadget guru. I don't know if you heard us talking about HD radio earlier. I know you had recommended.
I did hear. Yeah, and the radio that I talked about on the show about a month ago was Sanjian's radio. Okay, and they have several new models. They make a rack-mounted one, Leo, and then they make just a regular, like a tabletop.
Does anybody make a portable HD radio that you know of?
I don't know.
I haven't seen one.
Yeah,
What's the antenna like on those? It's just a telescoping antenna, right?
Yeah, it's not elaborate. And some just plug in, and you could put the antenna by the window and stuff like that. Yeah, I doubt if it's going to really give you one portable that's going to work real well. Satellite can because you're outside and
yeah, but I don't really like the satellite ones that much. You have to wear those weird headphones, or you have to glue an antenna to your forehead. So yeah, it's right. not Those aren't real good either.
Well, anyway,
that's just, I thought I'd bring that up. Yes.
I know. Anyway, but I got to tell you, Leo, after you came up here, up to Clear Lake, and you showed me your iPhone, I said, well, I got to look at it. In fairness, I got a ton of people who emailing me or calling me or whatever and said, Ron, you haven't talked about the iPhone. Do I get one now or do I wait or what do I do? So believe it or not, AT&T called me and says, well, we got one unit here for Northern California, and we're going to send it to you for like 10 minutes or whatever.
Wait a minute. They got one unit in all of Northern California.
Yes. Our friend
Lauren.
This
is for review we're talking about.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
My goodness.
So I got to be honored that they sent it to me.
Yes.
And, Leo, I have my segment today is going to be called the iPhone, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Okay.
Okay, so, first of all, my credentials as a reviewer, number one, as I told you, back in 1970, I was selling 18-pound briefcase phones, okay? and they had 9 channels in the entire, I'm in California, of course, up in Northern California, we had 9 channels. That meant only 9 people could use a phone at one time. So now we've really progressed from that, where we have phones that you could stick them in your ear now. They're so small. So anyway, I want to tell you that I want to give Apple kudos for waking up all the other phone manufacturers out there that we, the consumers, are indeed looking for better interfaces and better screens and better all-in-one wireless phones.
Hallelujah. Because, speak it out, brother. Amen.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. Samsung and Motorola and LG and Nokia, you know, please pay attention.
Well, wait a minute. Did you see? You haven't seen Nokia. Not only paid attention, they're doing an exact clone of the iPhone, which they say is coming out next year.
That's great. My analogy is like this, Leo. Just go back a few years. The automobile, I have a 1990 Buick Riata that I've had. No cup holders in it. Now, remember, the first car came out around 1915, the Model T.
Yes.
It took the automobile manufacturers 81 years to come out with cup holders. You know, and so here, you know, we've been having mobile phones. I started the phone company, which was the name of the phone company in the Burlingame. Back in 1980, selling phones, and then cell phones came to California in 1980 in Los Angeles, and 1985 in the San Francisco Bay Area. So imagine.
And by the way, if anybody wants to buy the domain thephonecompany.com, I believe it's for sale cheap.
No. It's expensive, Leo.
Oh,
because
that's
a great name. It's a great name. But you can contact me at ronald@usa.net, and we'll work out something. But it's a great name, The Phone Company. And I didn't just get it. I got it in 1980 or whatever. Anyway, so it took forever to get cup holders. Now, my latest vehicle, I have 13 cup holders. And you say, well, what do I need 13 cup holders? Well, Leo, you know all the phones I carry. I keep all my phones in different cup holders.
Cup holders are good for phones. In fact, I found that the iPhone fits cup holders quite well.
Okay, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, so let's get on with my thing here. So the good. First of all, iPhone, the sleek, slim design is absolutely fabulous. The best screen I have ever seen on any portable mobile phone, both inside and outside, meaning I even took yours, Leo, and took it outside in the sun, and it's terrific.
Yeah.
There's not a better screen out there.
Yeah.
Best phone device for showing off your pictures. I was able to put some pictures on there, and it is just great because you could use your finger, run through a bunch of pictures. You could enlarge the pictures, and if your resolution is decent in that thing, you could enlarge them and really zoom in on them and really see what you're looking at. It's one of the best portable viewers out there. I won't mention a name, sells their portable viewer. It's probably got a 5-inch screen on it. It's $500 to $600. So this device is absolutely really great for pictures, okay? The best internet experience while using Wi-Fi, since you can enlarge and magnify your web pages. For me, with wearing bifocals most of the day, I don't even have to put the bifocals on to see it because I could just use my finger and zoom in. You can enlarge and magnify while you're using a cell connection, but it is much slower than your Wi-Fi connection. Very good camera in low light. I would love to see the next generation have a flash on it. I think they need a flash. One button takes you back to all 16 startup icons. And setting up my Yahoo Mail or Gmail on this thing was a breeze. It was fantastic. Easiest phone I've ever set up to do that. I think Apple was great on that. The screen interface is the best. Love the idea of sliding the finger to unlock and zoom in by tapping screen is great. Now, I'll get into the bad. You still with me, Leo?
I'm with you. And by the way, I agree with you on everything you've said so far.
Okay, the price of $500 or $600 without subsidy, especially since AT&T is going to collect $700 minimum, probably closer to $2,000 for 2 years, I think is absolutely atrocious.
Yep,
okay, I think this thing should be a $299 device. Now, by the way, speaking of that, I will tell you one of the links I wanted to put up. Anybody looking for an iPhone wants to save $100. You know, Apple is selling the refurbs, the 4 gig for $399. And the 4 gig for $399 and the 8 gig for $499. So you save $100 if you want to go.
Probably Apple a good idea too. Apple refurbs are pretty reliable.
Yeah, they're going to be great because these are probably the people who bought two phones and didn't sell the second one. Anyway, AT&T Network, formerly Singer, has not been a favorite of consumers. That Consumers Report always gives them a downgrade on the stuff. While most other networks such as Verizon, Sprint have had their 3G broadband on many of their wireless phones, Apple cannot put AT&T High Speed, HSDPA, which stands for High Speed Data, pain in the ass, is due to the power requirements is too high and would suck most of the life out of the internal battery. So they had to choose their much slower edge system. And not having a removable battery and having to depend on either the store being able to replace a new one on the spot or sending it in for a week or two of not having your cell phone doesn't excite me. Now, I did talk to AT&T to ask them if they know, but I think they're telling me it's too early and you're supposed to be able to get 2 or 3 years. I don't know if you're going to get that. If you use the phone a lot, you're going to get probably at least a year out of it. Now,
I wouldn't worry about that too much. And by the way, I've gotten great battery life. It does have excellent battery life.
I'm finding I can get maybe a day and a half, maybe two.
That's good for a smartphone.
By the way, I only got it on Friday.
Yeah.
Being a BlackBerry user for the past 4 or 5 years, I do not think I can get comfortable typing with two hands like I can on my BlackBerry using two thumbs. So that's just kind of one of the negatives I have there on the bad. Now, the ugly. And I don't have a lot of ugly on this thing, but I will tell you, iTunes, to download my photos and my music, is not a piece of cake, and I think it's absolutely horrible. I think the interface on that, when they've designed such a classy phone, they need to get their act together, make it a little easier.
Did you use iTunes before?
Well, I have, but I have a lot of friends also who tell me the same thing, and I'm listening to other disc jockeys on satellite.
Many people like iTunes. I'm very happy with iTunes.
But remember, Leo, you're a geek. Yeah. And you're the king of geeks. Okay,
I'll
so I'm telling you,
that.
I'm a little bit of a geek, not as much as you are. And I try to evaluate this stuff. But if I was giving this phone to an aunt or an uncle or somebody else like that, they never would figure that out. And now, by the way, a little thing I've been told, I don't know how correct it is, but you were talking about Apple, what they're going to do. The thing I've been told that you're going to see iTunes being able to work via Wi-Fi because apparently it does not now. Correct.
What do you mean, work with the iPhone?
No, yes, you could do. You'll be able
really?
To use.
Yeah, there's no way. Right now, you have to dock it by a wire. There's no way to do it wirelessly.
Yes, so take a look. I know you're not going to be there. I don't know if I didn't get my invitation yet. And after the ugly, I might not get my invitation for next week's thing. But that might make it a little bit easier. And the last thing I will say here, I haven't verified this, Leo, but I've been told that if you put all your stuff in it, like your music and your photos and everything else, I haven't got my music in yet. I've been spending 2 days and I still don't have it, and you're not up here to help me on it. but I've been told if you cancel your service, you lose your music and you lose your photos and that stuff. The phone is not going to work the way it works with when you have the phone.
That's right. You won't lose them on the desktop, but the phone stops being an iPod unless you.
And if you have a $500 beautiful picture viewer, that would really disappoint me.
I agree. Which is, by the way, why there's been such a race to hack this thing, and you can hack it. So, but not a lot of people won't do that. I agree. That's a real problem. It's not an iPod. It's really a phone that has iPod capabilities as long as you keep paying for the phone service.
Anyway, so summing up here, if you're in a contract with your existing carrier and not on AT&T, Formula Singular, I would not rush out this time and pay $100 to $200 cancellation fee. Unless you have $400 to $500 burning a hole in your pocket, then I would hold off for Generation 2 or Generation 3.
Good.
Yeah. Anyway, the next item and my last item, Leo, is IO gear for people who are in a home, an older home, and want to be able to have... let's say they're not using Wi-Fi or whatever, and they want to have an Ethernet connection, a power line. IO Gear has come up with 85 megabits per second, which is much faster than their 14 megabits per second version. Their power line networking kit, and you get two of these. And let me tell you how easy this is. You just plug one in. Let's say you wanted to put You know, of course, you probably would wire your house yourself, but let's say you were not the guy you were, and you want to put a computer in Henry's room, not make it Wi-Fi. You can go in there, just plug in the power adapter. It's about 3 or 4 inches thick. Put the Ethernet cable from Henry's computer right into this. Go back to your router and plug this into your router, whatever, or into the other computer. And now you have networking that easy. You're able to, and this thing, the whole package, the pair, I believe is on, for Amazon, is like $129. But this is a much faster. Make sure you're looking for the 85 megabit per second power line networking kit.
Did you find it was that fast and that reliable?
Well, I tell you the truth, I have. In fact, by the way, I am using a similar stuff for my Slingbox. That's how I get my Slingbox to work. You know, because I didn't have a connection to one of the places. But you do find that this thing does work fairly well. I don't know about the speeds, but I've never found any speed tests that I've ever done to be accurate anyway. But I mean, the point is, if this is 85, it's going to be much faster than 14. Because if 14 wasn't 14, it was lower, and this is going to be faster.
Ron, thank you so much. As always, great to talk to you. Ron Rosberg, he's the gadget guru. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up. Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. I would agree with Ron's review of the iPhone. With one exception, I think iTunes is fantastic. But, you know, that's a matter of taste, obviously. And you know, I think the iPhone is the best phone I've ever used. It's far from perfect, but it's making huge strides in the usability. And as much as I would like to go back to, I have like Ron, I don't have as many as Ron does, but I have a few phones. And I have some other choices, and I, you know, I went back to the Nokia N95. Couldn't do it. Keep coming back to the iPhone. It's like democracy. It's not perfect, but it's the best we've got. Dennis in Oakland, California, listening on the great KGO. Hello, Dennis.
Hello, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate your show. It's great.
Thank you, sir.
I had the need to buy a new motherboard and CPU the other day, and I bought a board, and it didn't have an IDE channel on it. It was SATA only.
Okay, yeah, that's going to be the trend going forward. IDE is going away. I'm surprised it has no IDE, because your CD-ROMs generally will use IDE. I guess everything's using a SATA now.
Right. Well, yeah. I bought an SATA DVD drive writer as well.
Right.
And it doesn't have an audio port on the back like IDE drives do. How's it going to pick up audio from the DVD?
With DVDs, it does it digitally anyway for copy protection reasons. The only reason you had an audio port on the back of the old CD-ROMs was when you were playing audio CDs, you could route it, instead of routing it digitally, you could route analog audio through the sound card right directly to the speakers.
Right.
But nowadays, everybody's just doing digital audio.
Okay, so it's going to go through the data cable anyway.
Yes.
Okay. Also, on the same lines that you've been talking a lot about HD, it has a Realtek HD sound card built into the motherboard.
Right.
And apparently there's no XP drivers on it. The driver that comes with it is Vista.
That's right.
Do you think I can download a driver?
No,
for that?
You can't, and I'll tell you why. Take a guess. Just, you know, what two words do I hate more than anything in the world? Copy protection.
Yeah.
Vista has built in all the copy protection features that the lovely folks at the Motion Picture Association of America insisted on to make sure that you wouldn't steal. Because you're a thief. Did you know that, by the way?
I know.
Dennis, you're a thief. I'm a thief. We're all thieves, according to the Motion Picture Association of America. So, and you know what's the worst thing? Is a thief with a PC. So they've hated PCs for a long time because they're the number one tool for copying DVDs, mm-hmm. right? So what they've said now is, well, if you're going to do HD video, we're going to make darn sure you implement all of these schemes to prevent PCs from being used to steal HD video. By the way, these schemes were circumvented within a month. So it didn't work. Nevertheless, we're saddled with this. And one of the things we're saddled with is HD audio and video playback will not occur on XP because it doesn't support the proper hardware protection.
And the strange thing about it is when I first installed the software, it installed the Realtek drivers, and it would play their sample program. I didn't try a DVD.
Yeah, because it's not copy protected.
Right, okay. But as far as the sound card itself, when I go into the properties on the devices, it said the device wasn't present.
Yeah.
Even though it would play that clip.
Isn't this nice? Isn't this wonderful?
It is.
What a world we live in.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting
is
that,
I appreciate your help.
Yeah, so far nobody has no motion picture company has put it out to my knowledge put out a high def DVD that actually triggers all of this stuff. But they can if they need to, and that's the point. You know, in theory, you're not supposed to be able to play back. Let's say you bought an HD DVD player, put it in your computer. You've got Vista and all the right protections running. And you hook up your nice high-quality monitor that you bought, your digital DVI monitor, and you hook it up. It won't play because that monitor doesn't have the right copy protection. It doesn't have HDCP built into it. So Vista says, okay, everything's good here. You got the HD DVD. This is a legitimate player. You're not trying any tricks. It checks a few times every second to make sure you're not doing anything weird with the video driver. Oh, it looks all good. And then it looks at the monitor and said, whoa, slow down. Stop. Don't play it. Or more likely, play it, but play it really ugly. Lower the resolution because he doesn't have a compliant monitor. The whole chain has to be compliant. Everything has to be compliant for it to play. Now, that it's my understanding that's the discretion of the movie and the way the movie is encoded. So I think that you can play a lot of, if not all, HD DVD movies right now. Well, imagine the hue and cry. I mean, you've bought this whole system designed to play HD DVD, but you're using it with a legacy monitor that doesn't support HDCP. It won't work. People would be pretty upset. So I think we're in a transition period. I imagine that all HD DVDs will be encoded. And by the way, I include this generically. This is Blu-ray and HD DVD. All high-def DVDs will be encoded this way. This new gateway monitor, sure, it supports HDCP. Absolutely. That's it. So going forward, if you want a computer that can play high-def movies, you'll have to make sure that it's Vista and has all the proper hardware copy protection schemes built into it. The other thing I don't like about this is that no matter what copy of Vista you have these schemes running. Even if it's Vista Business and you don't have an HD DVD player, you never intend to play high-def content, or they call it premium content, you still have all these copy protections. You're stuck with it. There's no way around it. And I think that's one of the reasons Vista has some issues and is slow in some cases. There was the nasty bug where Vista's networking performance dropped precipitously if you had audio or video going. As long as there wasn't any audio or video going, its networking was just fine. But as soon as you started a movie, it doesn't have to be even a premium content, just any video or audio, you could be listening to iTunes, your network performance would go way down. And I have to think, I don't know, I think they fixed it, but I have to think that that was related also to these FATCA copy restriction things. You can hear more of me if you still want to. If you're not fed up and done. And it's not all iPhone either. You can hear more of me on my network, my Netcast network during the week, Monday through Friday. We've got lots of great podcasts on gadgets and Windows and Macintosh and Linux and parenting, even junk food. It's all at twit.tv. This Week in Tech is what TWIT stands for. twit.tv. That's my Netcast network. Don't forget, we've got the chat room at irc.dslextreme.com. And of course, we'd love to see you on the webpage too. Tech Guy Labs. com. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. Those of you staying with us, more of your calls to come. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. GoToMeeting web conference, and everyone can see your computer desktop on their computer screen. It's changing the way we do business. Try it free for 30 days. Go to GoToMeeting.com, click the orange Try It Free button, use my name, Leo, as the promo code. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. I'm going to take a lot of calls this hour. I want to get those calls in. I've been lax. I've been remiss. Let's face it, I've been a windbag. I want to take your calls, so we're going to do that. 8888 Ask Leo, also coming up, Chris Marquardt, our photo expert.
with some tips from the top floor, some photo digital photography tips, very useful tips. I've been following along closely. Todd's in Los Angeles next. Todd, welcome. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
Great, Todd. Thanks for hanging on.
Sure. Okay, I've got an email conundrum. I've been a graduate student for way, way too long, and I finally finished, which is a great thing, but I've depended on my university's, you know, web service and web server for many, many years, and they're about to boot me off. And I like, you know, I can access my email by their web server, and I've also got a, you know, I've got Eudora on my desktop at home, and so I can download everything, so I have that flexibility. And I have no idea if I go, if I sort of get a Gmail account or some other service, am I going to be able to continue to do that, or what the story is?
Yeah, I mean, with so you can with some. There are some desktop email clients that support webmail and vice versa. For instance, if you're on Windows, there's Windows Live Mail, which works with Hotmail, so you could create a Hotmail account.
Mm-hmm.
My preference is to use something called IMAP.
IMAP.
There's the mail you get, the kind of traditional mail that Eudora gets and most email clients get, is called POP, Post Office Protocol Mail, POP.
Right.
This is the equivalent of HTTP and FTP. All these P's are protocols for the Internet. So POP is the most common mail protocol. But IMAP gives you exactly what you're talking about, which is a centralized store of your messages that email clients can use, can get a window on. So if you use multiple computers, or sometimes you're on the Internet and on the road, and sometimes you're at home on your desktop, you'll see the same mail, the same sent mail, the same received mail. If you answer a message on one machine, it'll show up as answered on the other machine. So they're completely in sync.
Yeah, because I don't have that now.
Yeah, and that's what you want. It's what I use. And it works with Eudora, it works with Outlook, it works with Apple Mail. Almost all email clients support IMAP. In fact, if you look, you can tell very easily when you set up an account, see if it gives you the choice between a POP account and an IMAP account, or IMAP account, I should say. And that,
so
those are the two choices usually.
Got it.
The webmail is different. You know, Hotmail, Yahoo, and Gmail are neither, in most cases, neither POP or IMAP. They often offer a POP interface. Hotmail does not, so you have to use Hotmail with Windows Live. Yahoo Mail and Gmail do offer a POP interface, but the problem with POP is you download the message. If you answer the message on Eudora, it doesn't show up on Gmail that it was answered. So that's why I really like IMAP. There's some negatives to it because you have to have an internet connection, pretty much. Although IMAP will cache the messages. But it gives you, basically, the idea is to give you the best of both worlds, of a web-based email that you have a desktop client for.
So how do you, IMAP is not a, it's not a program, it's not,
well,
it's not a...
No, no, it's some, many format. Internet service providers provide IMAP, you could ask them. If not, I use a service called Fastmail, which is very affordable, fastmail.fm, they're out of Australia. I've been very happy with them. I think they're the premier IMAP provider, fastmail.fm.
Have you had them a while?
Yeah, years. I've been very happy with them. There's another company called Island Mail that I've also got an account with that I like a lot, islandemail.com, and they're an IMAP provider as well. They have one advantage, which is they have very good anti-spam technology. For geeks, for people who want control of their mail, Fastmail's better because I have access to some very sophisticated anti-spam and mail processing technologies on the server side that I use quite heavily. I have a very elaborate mail script, for instance, that processes all my mail, and that's provided. Fastmail allows you to do that.
So if I got a Fastmail account, is it a matter of, you know, setting up an account and you log into Fastmail for your web web mail,
and
then
use Eudora as well if you want to, if you're on a desktop.
And that I've already got on my machine, I would just change the settings and
yes,
go in.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
I'm a huge fan of IMAP in general. I think it's really good. There, as I said, there are little issues every once in a while you run up against, you know, generally having to do with network access. But I've found it to be everybody's good. In fact, better for people who have multiple accounts or want to get their mail in multiple places. It's a really good solution. It's the kind of solution that an Exchange server, if you have a workplace that offers Exchange servers or Lotus Mail servers, that's the kind of thing they do. But this is, I think, a little more lightweight. It's an internet standard, and it's very, I don't think Fast, well, you can get a free account with Fastmail and try it before you
I will do that. And the other thing is, that's why I asked if it was, if you'd been with them for a while, is I don't have to keep changing my email address every 6 months.
Well,
like
now,
people do.
I would suggest that you not use, I don't, you know, I use leo@techguylabs.com and some other addresses because I, what I would suggest doing is buying a domain name. They're not expensive. Go to GoDaddy, buy a domain name, you know, get toddphd.com.
And I like the sound of that.
Dr. Todd and or whatever it is, and then have that mail routed through to the fast mail so nobody ever sees the fast mail. And if for some reason you want to change, you do is you change the redirect, but your mail stays todd@drtodd.com.
Oh, wow.
No, believe me, that's the only solution, because no matter how good they are, you're going to change your email.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's much more professional. You know, it really is much more professional to have. I mean, well, leoville.com is not that professional. but my kids, I got mykidsnames.com, and that's much more professional in the long run, I think, than Hotmail, Yahoo Mail, Gmail.
It says,
hey, look, this person's pretty serious.
Yeah. Not flybynight.com
right.
or whatever.
Exactly.
Yes. Well, I appreciate the suggestions. I'm going to.
You're welcome, Todd. I could go on and on about email. It's one of my favorite topics because I have so much. And anything I could do to make it easier, I try to do. Brad, Irvine, California, listening on the great KFI. Hello, Brad. Hi, Brad.
Brad, you're on.
Cool.
There he is.
Yeah. My dad was thinking about getting an Xbox 360 for me for my birthday.
Yes, Dad! Yes! Yo! Good.
Yeah.
That's a good dad.
Yeah, and we were wondering, what kind of monitor we should buy for it. Like, we were thinking around, 21, 24 inches.
Yeah, that's plenty. I mean, it depends how close you're going to sit. But remember, it's an HD gaming system. So you want to get a monitor that could do 720p or 1080i. Either would be okay. But
it has 20. 720p.
Yeah, because then you're going to get the full quality and it's going to look great. 24 inches is fine as long as you're, you know, arm's length away from it. If you're sitting across the living room, it's too small. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, and since Dad's paying for it, I'd say get the biggest monitor Dad'll spring for. You know the secret of this, by the way, Brad. Dad's buying it for himself, too.
Yeah, because it's supposed to be the family.
Yeah. I bet he said that. I said, now, Brad, you understand that this is the family's Xbox, and we'll be playing games on it, too. Did he say that?
Exactly, yeah.
I say that to my son when I bought the PS3. Now, son, it's yours, and it's your birthday present, but it is the family. That means Dad wants to play games on it, too. That's okay, Brad.
Yeah.
It's a fun thing to do with your dad.
Yeah, what's a good response time for it?
Yeah, an LCD monitor, you're right. And that, boy, you're asking the good questions, Brad. LCDs are slower than TVs. The response time you're talking about, I know you know this, but just so others know, is the amount of time it takes a dot on the screen, a picture element on the screen, to go from off to fully on to off again. And you want to get, for best gaming, if it's too slow, the games will look schmooshy and smeary. It won't be crisp. For best gaming performance, you want to get under 10 milliseconds. 7 or 8 or 9 would be best.
Oh, okay.
Okay? Lower is better, but if it's like 20 milliseconds, that's too slow.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
And what's like the best input? Would it be like component, DVI, or S-Video?
The best is DVI. That's full digital.
Okay.
Then the next, and if you get an Xbox Elite, you can use HDMI, which is great because it has audio, but it's the same quality as DVI. So,
what was that again?
If you get the Xbox Elite, it has an HDMI connector on it, and that's digital. It's the same as DVI plus the sound. It all comes in one cable, and that's kind of convenient, but it's not any better. The best quality is either HDMI or DVI. Then component, which is analog but very good quality. I use Component, actually, and it's fine on my HDTV.
Mm-hmm.
And then far below Component is S-Video or Composite or any of the other choices. So best to use digital if you can, DVI.
And do I need a monitor to run native modes?
What do you mean native modes?
I mean, like, native mode.
Well, you want the Xbox will... Are you going to use a computer with this thing or just the Xbox with it?
Just the Xbox.
Just if you get a monitor that has a resolution of 720p or 1080,
horizontal resolution of 7, 8, 20, or 1080, that's the best. That's what's called native. It means that the number of dots, the number of dots that the Xbox is putting out, number of lines the Xbox is putting out, is exactly the same as the number of dots or lines the monitor is capable of doing. If it's any more or less, the picture will have to be scaled, and that'll ruin the quality a little bit. So, you know, the guy at the store will help you, can help you with this. You just say, I want a monitor that matches the resolution of the Xbox. And if you go to a good store where the guy knows what he's doing, he'll be able to say, oh, yeah, well, this monitor is 1920 by 1200. That'll be, you know, that's fine. It doesn't have to be that high. It could be lower. But what you don't want is 1024 by 768 or something like that. Well, I guess that'll work, too. No, it's not wide enough. You want an HD 16 by 9 monitor. Hey, good luck, Brad. What a nice dad you've got. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, talking about technology. 8888, ask Leo. 8888 275 5536. 888 275 5536. That's the number. I know I said that fast. Just remember 8888, ask Leo. Jack on the line, Morgan Hill, California. Hey, Jack, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, thanks. You might be full of hot air, but you got a lot of good information.
Big, you call me Big Wind from the West.
That's it. I'm having a problem with when I shop for my wife online.
When you shop, you shop for your wives online?
My wife.
Oh,
wife.
I see. I'm sorry. I misunderstood.
And I look at different gifts for anniversaries and birthdays.
Yes.
Later on that day or the next day, my wife sees the same thing on the computer.
I hate that.
And I'm trying to think, how can I solve that problem?
Clear your history. It depends on the browser you're using, but almost all browsers will allow you to clear your history by going into the preferences of the browser.
Okay.
And there's usually a clear history or clear temp files, that kind of thing. And that's what she's seeing. She's seeing the drop-down autocomplete in the top of the screen, and she's seeing... perhaps she's seeing cached files and that kind of thing. So there are programs that will do that, but frankly, you don't need it. Every program out there now will do that in the preferences.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Jack. I should remember to do that myself. My wife's birthday's tomorrow. There's companies that'll FedEx it out. See, it's Labor Day, though. That's going to be a problem. If I'm not back next week... it's because I didn't buy my wife a birthday present. Eric, Simi Valley, California. Hello, Eric. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. I got a question for you regarding my Toshiba laptop.
Okay.
Actually, it's a problem. It's an issue with my external speakers. I've had my laptop for basically about a year. About 2 months ago, when I'm, booting up the computer, I always plug in my external speakers in the same USB port. And like I said, 2 months ago, it stopped. I only get sound out of my internal speakers. Basically, the speakers I bought down at Fry's or wherever I bought it, they basically stopped working. And I plugged them into other people's laptops. Works beautiful. I'm wondering, is this a USB port issue or is this a virus maybe? Do viruses attack that?
That's probably not a virus or spyware. Nowadays, malicious programs attempt not to be caught. It's unlikely that. So the speakers work fine. And you're connecting the same way, the same cable and the same USB dongle and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's one of those newfangled speakers I guess you don't need to plug in to power, to get
right.
power from.
That's a better way, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, well,
okay.
I shouldn't say that. The better way is USB, though. I like the idea of getting your speakers hooked up via USB because what happens is the audio conversion from the digital audio the computer generates to the analog the speakers need happens outside of the computer, which means it's a quieter transformation. There's less RF.
Smoother.
Yes, yeah. It does a better job. But it might lend itself to this particular kind of problem because if you've got a problem with your USB ports or your USB drivers,
There's so many places it could be software errors in a lot of different. It could be the sound drivers themselves.
Okay. Do you think maybe I wonder what I should do?
Mixer. Well, it's kind of a tough one to diagnose. One way to do it would be if you got a. Let's see, what would be the easiest way? I mean, you could get a Linux boot CD and see if the audio works then. This is what we're trying to do is figure out the process of troubleshooting, simply eliminating possible causes until you come up with the one that has to be. Well, in fact, we eliminate a whole bunch of causes by testing the speakers on another computer. That was brilliant. Because now you know the speakers are fine, the cable's fine, the USB converter is fine. So it's something to do. It's a computer. Now we have a little bit more difficult problem because we have to figure out, is it a hardware issue? Are your USB ports working normally in every other respect?
Yeah, they work great.
You do get the audio from USB, right? You're not plugging it into the audio port at all. How are the speakers connected to the computer?
It's got a USB connection where I just slide it into the second port there.
Just USB.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure that it wasn't just getting power from the USB, but it's also getting audio. Okay. And you tried it in the other USB. Slot as well, right?
Yes, and it still doesn't work.
Still doesn't work. Okay. I mean, those both USB connectors are connected to the same USB chip. In most laptops, there's only one USB chip. If that chip were damaged, that could cause it. It could be. It's more likely to be software drivers, and that's why I was trying to think of a way to test it with another operating system. You know, you get a boot CD of Linux and see if you can hear audio, and if you can, then you know it's not a hardware problem at all. It's the operating system or drivers. I would check with the manual. You said it's Toshiba?
Yes.
I'd go to the Toshiba website and get an update on the software drivers for the motherboard.
Okay.
And that'll include sound drivers. Make sure you got the latest on those. Windows XP?
Pardon? Yes. Yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah, it is. I'm like I said, it worked great. And I had this, you know what, come to think of it, I bought a Toshiba, it's a Toshiba satellite.
Uh-huh.
And I bought one. I liked it so much, I bought one when they first came out, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
And I gave one away to a friend, and basically I just bought another one. And the same thing happened. I just remembered that. The same thing happened.
Oh, interesting.
And I'm like, would I say something mean against Microsoft?
They know it's you. It's hard for me to be honest with you, tell whether it's software or hardware, but do some tests. You might be able to narrow it down. Leo Laborde, the tech guy. Unlimited local and long-distance calling for less than $20 a month. Call 888-60-POWER. That's 888-60-POWER. Having a little Skype difficulty there. I might have to see if we can get Chris to do this a little bit later on. A little bit of trouble. We'll try again next break. Skype sometimes works and sometimes doesn't, and the real problem is coming from Germany, it's kind of hard to predict. Make that work a little bit later on. We have some great assignments, by the way. I'll put this plug in at least for Chris. We have a photo assignment. It's fun too. We're having some fun with it. At least I am. And there are quite a few submissions already. If you want to participate in the photo assignment, there are no prizes. It's not a contest. It's just for fun. Give you something to do with your cameras. The assignment is careful. The word just illustrate the word careful. A picture, and you want to take a new picture, not something from your library, but go out with your camera and look for something to illustrate the word careful. Careful. And maybe using Skype. That could be the word. That could be the picture. If you have a great picture or you take one and you'd like to share it with us, here's how we do it. We use Flickr, which is a free photo sharing site. If you're a photographer, you really ought to have an account on Flickr anyway. It's free to set up. FLICKR.com. There's no E. Flickr.com. Then tag the photo with the word careful and submit it to the Tech Guy group. Orbit Gal is there, and she will
add it to the list. I've submitted my careful picture, and next week we'll do a little review of the pictures submitted. All right. So I'm sorry we could. I don't know. I'll see if I can get Chris to. We'll try that again. We'll try that again in a little bit. I'll have to get him back online. Meanwhile, though, we get back to the phones. That's the most important thing anyway. And Marie is on the line from Vista, California. Hello, Marie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I have a major problem.
Oh, no.
Microsoft is giving me a bad time. Since August 15th, I have not received any hot fixes.
Okay.
And checking on with Bell, BellArc, I found that there are 31 missing pieces of hotfix starting on August 15th.
Yeah, you really want those updates. Now, that's only two updates that you've missed. That's August and September's, but that's significant.
But I went to Microsoft and went to the download the hotfixes.
Yeah.
And I get in a continuous circle. It tells me they're going to check my registration and ownership, and then it goes around in a circle, comes right back there, and I don't know where I am. I mean, it just... I'm lost.
Yeah. So when you run Windows Update from the Start menu, what happens then?
On the Start menu?
Yeah, there's a entry that says Windows Update, or you could just go to windowsupdate.com on your Internet Explorer browser.
That's what happens.
That's when you're talking about it. Okay. And it gets in this loop. It's not ever-ending. It sounds like this can happen sometimes if you get a Windows Update that fails. So this is probably what happened in July, is you got the updates, and they didn't fully install.
And, no, this is August 15th.
Yeah, I understand. You couldn't get August's, but it probably happened. Well, it could have happened in August, but it may have happened in July, where you got the updates, they downloaded, but they failed. And then that blocks you from doing further updates.
So what do I do?
This is such a pain. In the butt.
You got that right. I've been 2 days on this.
And I'm proud of you for pursuing it and wanting to do it.
It's been driving me a little bit batty.
There is a note from Microsoft in their knowledge base, support.microsoft.com. It's what you do depends. If you look at the note, there's 20 different solutions.
Oh, boy.
I'll run through a couple of them, but I want to give you this number. Write this down. 906... 602. It's six digits. 906-602. So if you go to support.microsoft.com and you enter in that number where it says search the knowledge base for, it'll show you this article, and you'll see why I didn't read it out verbatim. Because there's a lot. But the symptom is installation fails for a particular update, or you were repeatedly offered an update even if you've installed it multiple times, or you're offered an update but the update is not installed. That sounds like one of your symptoms, right?
It sounds like.
Yeah. And what happens is you have an unsuccessful update on your system. So, method one, view your installation history on the Windows Update website and see if you can find the error. And it tells you how to do that.
Okay.
You review the update. It's in the Windows Update window on the browser. It's just show you review your update history. And there'll be a red X on the one that didn't, that failed. That's the one that's blocking you.
Okay, I went to BellArc, and it shows me all the...
yeah, that's not... But you need to do this through Windows Update.
Okay, through Windows.
Yeah, BellArc's giving you the right information, but now you have to do what Microsoft says, and this is ridiculous. You will ultimately... You're going to probably have to find the file, and it's got a number on it, .log, and you're going to have to... Oh, it's just... I mean, I don't even want to start reading this. It goes on and on and on. But this is what you have to do, Marie. I really apologize. This is why I frankly am pretty clear when people ask me what to get. I tell them, don't get Windows for home users. If you had an IT department, they'd come over and they'd fix it.
Yeah, well, I'm my IT department.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I don't think any normal mortal should have to use Windows.
You don't pick on an old lady and do this.
I agree. I'm not picking on you. Microsoft is.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's
when you're 77 years old, you're supposed to be able to computer without trouble.
I'm proud of you for getting this far.
Well, it's driving me batty.
I don't blame you. You could call the manufacturer. They could walk you through it. Microsoft could walk you through it. But I think you could do it yourself.
I went to Microsoft, and they told me for $98 they'd talk to me.
Drives me crazy. $98, that's a nice number. I wonder.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
Jeez.
Yeah, I mean, you could, you could read this knowledge base article. It's a recipe. It's a cookbook. You'll go step by step. And it'll tell you what to do. But I have to say, there isn't a really good way to handle this, frankly. And this happens to a lot of people. It's fairly common. I get this call all the time. And it's a blocked installation. If you were my mom, I'd come over and I'd say, okay, well, let's delete this file and delete this file, and then run it again, and it will all work. That's what's happening.
I'm about ready to use a hammer and beat this machine again.
Yeah, or that. The real problem is that computers are really too complicated for normal human beings to have to use. But we want to use them, and I understand why. They're great. But when they go wrong, fortunately, this doesn't happen all the time. But when they go wrong, it used to. When I first started doing this show, man, you know, all these things were common. It's gotten better, believe it or not. But still, when they go wrong, it's not something, you know, there's no user serviceable parts inside. If it's really driving you batty, you could also take it to a friendly neighborhood computer store. You could call Make It Work, our sponsor. Anybody who's worked with computers a lot knows exactly what to do. This is a common, fairly common problem with Windows. It's just a stuck update. But I'm really proud of you for, and what most people do, Marie, most people just say, ah, well, and stop updating. And I'm really glad that you know that's not safe, that you really need to get this thing fixed, because if you don't download the updates, you're going to be vulnerable, and it's going to get worse and worse and worse, and there'll be more and more hackers trying to bang on your door, and you'll be got more and more holes on your system. Again, this is why I tell home users a Macintosh is a better choice, frankly. But support.microsoft.com. This is what, by the way, if you paid $98, all they would do is walk you through this. Support.microsoft.com. Search for 906602. And you'll see the ridiculous. It's about 8 screens, 9 screens. It just goes on and on and on. I don't know if there's no better answer. I wish there were. But that's the actual answer to the question. Isidore from Los Angeles. Hello, Isidore. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I'm here. Thank you, Leo.
Thanks for hanging on.
Thank you. And the reason I'm calling is because I bought my son a laptop. I actually have a couple of laptops for each of my sons. And one of them has started acting a little funny. He started clicking on different things, and it started giving him a message that said, you do not have, let's see, Windows cannot access the specified device, path, or file. You may not have the appropriate permissions to access the item. So then I turned around and logged him out, and I logged back in as the administrator.
Right.
And I keep getting the same thing also. So no matter what I click on desktop or whatever, I still keep getting the same code.
Do you know where what is it that he's trying to access? Is it really somebody else's file? Is it something that you copied over from another machine?
No, actually, it's just the icons on the desktop. Let's say he...
Okay, it's probably busy then. Now, it's probably just locked. Now, it could also be, and this is, I hate to sound like this is a little more scary,
well,
but it could...
It's anything on the desktop. Even if he just barely logs on on his computer, let's say he'll double click on the Mozilla Firefox, he'll get that error code. He double clicks on Trend Micro Internet Security, that won't go on. And then when I do the same thing, I re-log on by myself, do the same type of thing, don't have anything else going, and double click as the administrator, I get the same error codes now also.
In his directory or the administrator's directory?
And the administrator's directory.
So it's basically the whole computer.
Yeah.
Okay. Clearly something seriously wrong has happened. I was gonna tell you how to fix the permissions issue, but it's not a permissions issue. It is it's a spyware issue. Or something. Something nasty has happened to your system.
Well, you know I was able to get into my house call from a back end. I double-clicked on the little icon that on the bottom.
Yeah,
that
good.
And I was able to get in. So I'm running house call to see if maybe that'll clear up some of that.
He's talking about housecall.antivirus.call, which is an online antivirus. That's a good idea. Because there's something on there.
And if that doesn't work, any suggestions?
Yeah, reinstall Windows.
Well, okay, that'll be fine.
Yeah, back up what you can and reinstall, because it's probably, even if you found a virus, it's seriously damaged.
Gotcha.
And it's damaged to the point where, if it's starting to do that, it's damaged to the point where
you'd probably be better off reinstalling than anything else.
Okay. Well, that's what I was thinking that I was going to have to do, and I don't mind doing that. But
I hate giving that answer, by the way.
I know.
It drives me crazy. I wish there were a better answer.
Well, but I'm comfortable with backing everything up and doing it.
And it gives you a good backup.
One last question, if I could, real quick, but nobody's been able to answer this for me.
Well, you're going to have to hang on because the commercial is banging at the door. But hang on, we'll get back to you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Just a few minutes remaining in the show before we head out on the Labor Day weekend. Isidore in Los Angeles had one more question. What's your one more question, Isidore? Now, I feel I owe you since I'm making you reinstall Windows.
Oh, well, just a quick question. As far as DVD or streaming video playing from my laptop, another laptop, into my television, I get desktop on my screen, my television, but I can't get the video to play.
Yeah. Video plays back on most computers in what's called an overlay mode. It's not part of the desktop, and that's because older computers were unable to handle the video. It was too high bandwidth. So the overlay mode just basically blasts the video out to the screen independently of the desktop. You'll see the same thing if you try to get a screenshot of video playback. So one way to try to fix this is to, and this happens a lot on laptops, is to turn off video acceleration in your display preferences.
Okay.
The quote, acceleration means use overlay video.
Okay.
If you can disable overlay video, that usually works. In some machines, you can't.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Leo. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, Isidore. I appreciate
your
listening.
I listen to your program all the time.
Bless you.
All right.
We just need a million more people like you, and I'm set.
Okay.
Take care.
I'll keep telling them. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Yes, spread the word. Will you, please? Joanne. Hi, Joanne in Apple Valley. You're so patient. I really appreciate your waiting.
Okay. I'm scheduled to get fiber optics installed on Tuesday.
Oh,
and
so jealous.
I want to know. Huh?
I'm so jealous. That's great.
I wondered if you could comment about it, because I looked on the internet and I can't find anything about it. And I wonder, are they having any problems with it? Is it a good deal?
Are you getting the Verizon Fios?
And my computer.
Right. Are you getting Fios? Verizon?
Am I what?
Is it Verizon's Fios service?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. It's excellent. It's a great deal.
It is.
Yeah. What they're doing essentially is giving you very, very, very high speed bandwidth via fiber optics to usually to your curb or somewhere near your curb, and then they'll put Ethernet into your house of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting much better performance than any other alternative. The price is very affordable.
So my son says.
Yeah, your son's doing this, huh? Yeah. No, it's very good. I know a number of people who have it are very happy. There have been some outages. It's still a little early days on this. I mean, that's why I'm jealous, because I would do it in a heartbeat if I could. But it's not everywhere. They're rolling it out slowly. You're lucky that they're rolling it out in Apple Valley.
Yeah, especially since we're on the high desert and it's practically unpopulated compared to other places.
Well, I think one of the things they're doing is rolling it out in smaller markets to make sure it can handle they're testing it. So you're very fortunate. I don't know of any negatives. I think you're going to be, it's a little more expensive, but not horribly so.
It's cheaper than I'm paying my provider now.
Oh, excellent. Oh, absolutely.
For a month, but I'm wondering what they're going to stick me with later. So.
Well, and that, you know, really, here's what Verizon's interest is in all this. They would like, ultimately, notice they're already, they're combining, you know, services, and Comcast is doing the same thing. The phone company is going to do the same. Everybody wants all your business. They want your phone, local, long distance.
Of course.
They want your data, but what they really also want is your cable. They would like to serve you television shows over that band.
Oh, listen, I can hardly wait. I don't like the provider on that one.
Yeah.
So that's
nobody likes their cable company. Now, if Verizon becomes the incumbent carrier and dominates, will they be any better? I don't know. But for now, the competition is a very good thing. I think I would absolutely encourage you to get it. And Joanne, call us back and let us know how you like it.
Okay, I will.
Yeah. No negatives at all that I know of. It's just
super
good at service at a very good price. And it's because Verizon wants to get into this business, not just the business of data. Data is not what they're interested in. They can't make very much money just serving raw data. They want to serve premium content. That's where the money is.
They want to sell you pizza. They want to sell you stamps. They want to sell you TV shows. And they need that big fat pipe into your house. And they're willing, they're probably, I know they're selling it to you at a loss. They're probably losing a lot of money nationwide on this Fios system. But they're looking way down the road. That's why it takes a big company like Verizon to do this. They're looking way down the road to the time when that big fat pipe sends data in and takes money out. And they expect to make a lot. Jim in Wrightwood, California. Hello, Jim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, hi, Leo. Hey. You got to me. Just as a thunderstorm is arriving here in Wrightwood.
Wait, watch, we got flash flood warnings, I know, in that area, and be careful, yeah.
Yeah, well, this will be the third day in a row that the roads have been washing out and all of that. So,
yeah.
But I'm sitting out on the porch hoping I don't get hit by lightning. And
well, I just hope it cools it off. Is it over 100?
Oh, God, no, it hasn't been.
Oh, good.
No, it's been, right now, I look, it's, according to the thermometer in a shaded place on the porch, it's like 70.
Oh, I'm jealous.
73.
It's 103 in Burbank.
I believe it, yeah.
I am jealous.
Well, hey, like yesterday, I rode my motorcycle. I left here about noon. I rode my motorcycle down to San Bernardino. And when I got down the hill and got onto 15.
Oh, I bet you felt that.
It was like 68 when I left here. Yeah. And it was like 100 and something on Interstate 15.
Yeah. No, you're lucky. You're up in the mountains, I guess, huh?
Oh, yeah. I'm 5,340 feet.
Well, no wonder it's so pleasant.
Hey, oh, yeah. It's deluxe. In fact, I'm thinking of putting my jacket on.
I'm so jealous. What can I do for you today, Jim?
Well, let's see. I've got a couple Mac questions because I know you're a Mac dude. So I've got an older G4. I mean, I think I bought it in 2000. Never did much with it, and I've been, you know, had PCs all over the place and build them and get them working and then break them down so I can fix them, et cetera. Just sort of a hobby deal.
My kind of guy. My kind of guy, Jim. I got 60 seconds left, though, so we better.
Okay, all right. I've got a Nikon LS1000 scanner that I bought in 1995.
SCSI.
And it's SCSI.
SCSI.
So, and I have a SCSI card. Should I be able to dump it into the G4 Mac?
That's a really good question. You do have a SCSI card that works with that G4?
Well, it should, because it's a PCI card.
Yeah, and that older G4 is running OS 9?
No, I put Tiger, one of those cats, I put that in there.
I have no idea if that'll work. I mean, Apple pretty much, with Adaptec, invented SCSI. They were the first to put it on their computers,
right.
They've kind of abandoned it. You know, everything's been replaced by USB. Worst case, you might be able to get a SCSI USB adapter. But then your issue is going to be the drivers. And that's before you do anything.
That was the main thing. I've got a SCSI USB adapter, but...
Yeah,
you know,
before you do anything, you've got to see if Nikon makes a Mac driver, or it's hopeless. Sorry I'm out of time, but thanks, Jim. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy. Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to hear the show live, check your local listings or visit our website, leo.am, for a list of stations where you can hear the Tech Guy radio show live on the air. You can also hear archived shows at leo.am and subscribe to our podcast there, or open your podcasting client and subscribe to the feed at leo.am/podcasts/KFI. Thanks to Howard Bailey for the music for this podcast. You can find more of Howard's work at soundclick.com. Thanks to Premier Radio Networks for syndicating the show. Most of all, thanks to you for listening. This is Leo Laporte. I'll see you next time on The Tech Guy.